Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Irrational Fear listeners, we have a live show coming up on Tuesday. We've got a huge lineup, including Jane Caro, Alice Fraser, and the leader of the One Asian Party, Michael Hing, who's going to be doing the One Asian Party launch on stage at Giant Dwarf. If you want to be part of an historic political campaign, come along to Giant Dwarf. The tickets are at giantdwarf.com.au. And if you use the code PODCAST, you get $15 tickets. Oh, Lewis is also going to be there.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I love to be forgotten. always a pleasure. Yes, I'll be there, but don't worry about that. Jane Caro is much better.
And DJ Dylan Bain will also be there, and we're going to be hearing from a little bit from him a little later on in this show tonight. All right, let's start the podcast.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair dumb, and Section 45. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, Clive Palmer says he's worth $4,000 million, which proves he has trouble grasping figures, not just his own. And Health Minister Greg Hunt admits to the National Press Club that Scott Morrison is evolving into the Liberal Party's greatest ever leader, which is strange because Pentecostals don't believe in evolution. And Sky News presenter Chris Kenny has quit Twitter. Apparently, he wants to spend more time with his dog. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Hello and welcome to Irrational Fear. This is the show that tells you what you should be scared of. Joining us in the studio tonight are two of News Corp's finest corpses. They're live corpses.
Still live corpses. Still warm
corpses. We've got Joe Hildebrand from news.com.au.
Hi,
and Studio 10.
Daniel, how are you?
Welcome. And we've got Janine Parrott from Sky News. G'day, Janine.
Hello, Dan.
Thank you for joining us here at Irrational Fear. And also, we've got Triple J's Lewis Hobber, the public broadcaster.
Boom! Always nice to be here, Dan.
All right. It is great to have your company here. I want to talk a little bit about Clive Palmer's insane press conference. Did you see it earlier this week? It was a 12-minute rambling press conference with Deb Knight. Deb Knight was not pulling punches, asking the tough questions. But when you're asking tough questions and the person you're interviewing is just completely ignoring those questions, it kind of doesn't even work.
If you're talking about Clive Palmer just rambling on nonsensically, you're going to have to be more specific, Dan. Was it this year?
It was last week. Oh. Deb Knight was asking him tough questions about workers, payments, all sorts of things. When she really pressed him on those workers, he came out and said, yeah, I'm a bad man, so what? Which I thought was very refreshing.
There were other words.
Yeah, well, it was nice to see some honesty from Clive on that, yeah.
What would you describe him as, Janine?
Oh, I once said that I was worried I used too many B words, bombastic, blowhard, buffoon, and I was going to move on to the C words.
Make your way throughout the whole alphabet. Terrific. He also said he's worth $4,000 million. Janine, you are an economics expert, having reported in finance for a long time.
And even I had to think twice. I thought, you don't often hear 4,000 million. I added it up because there's American billionaires and Australian billionaires.
What's the difference?
That's basically 4 billion.
Right.
The 4,000 million in our terms is basically 4 billion, which is still more than double what the rich list claims his worth is, and I'd say still $4 billion more than he's worth.
The rich list claims he's like only worth $1.8 billion, yes, right? And so, but what about British billions? Do they?
Well, American billions, there is 1,000 million is a billionaire, so they're billionaires, but they've gone back to our. It's very confusing, which is why Clive thinks he can confuse us because we are confused.
Where's his recline when you need him? We
you
really
don't
need this
believe
explained.
A word he says when it comes to money. That's the simple answer.
He has no policies whatsoever. I don't know if you saw this. Last week in the Daily Telegraph, he put out a double-page spread basically saying two things. One, don't vote for Liberal. Two, don't vote for Labor. And he actually offered no other policies whatsoever.
But that, to be fair, that is a pretty good policy. I mean, that is where a third of the electorate's at right now. And the way that they've both been going, well, you know, he's onto something.
Do you think he can capture a third of the vote, Joe?
No. No, I think he's picking up soft One Nation votes that got pissed off with the gun thing a bit. I think their base pretty much didn't mind the gun thing. And then, of course, once the Steve Dixon groping strip club sort of thing went. I mean, the guy didn't even pick up. He wasn't even successful. So he's drunk and he's a loser.
But back to Clive, though.
Oh, Clive. Sorry.
We're not at Steve Dixon yet. Back to Clive, though. How do you think he's going to go? Like, do you think?
I honestly think were it not for the implosion of One Nation, he would be absolutely nowhere on the radar. I think people are looking for a place to park their protest vote, and it could be a can of apricots, it could be a jar of Brill cream, or it could be Clive Palmer.
It could be a tub of Nutella. Janine, is he not racist enough to kind of pick up more of those Hanson votes? Is this part of a problem?
I don't know. I fear for Australia. I mean, that's one of those things you say, I'd leave the country. If Clive Palmer gets back in, it just shows what's wrong with compulsory voting.
In the Deb Knight interview, he said that he's going to win government. And it took Deb Knight a step back and she went, whoa, win government? Are you going to be Prime Minister? He said, oh, yes.
He's running in the Senate. He can't be Prime Minister.
Surprising.
No, he can't, but he can. Yeah. Somebody, imagine what had happened if they won. Then somebody would resign and he'd run in the by-election.
Oh, there
you
my go.
Could, you don't think he's going to miss out on being PM, do you?
He could potentially hold the balance of power in the Senate. That's not inconceivable.
Yes.
I think he's done quite well with the whole, yes, I owe the workers money, but I'm not going to give you any unless I win.
Yes.
Like it's like the whole, you know, the old saying, you know, if you owe the bank $1 million, it's your problem. But if you owe the bank $100 million, it's the bank's problem. So I reckon the reason, because Herbert is the seat where he has screwed over the most people. And it's also the seat where the United Australia Party and Clive Palmer is the most popular. So I reckon there's a bunch of workers there thinking, holy crap, if I don't vote this guy in, I'm never going to see my money.
He claimed this week that he put the money in a bank account, and I looked up, you had to fill in all these forms. I feel sorry for him. There's about 7 forms and proof of work and stat decks from different liquidators. He is not making it easy.
Then you've got to attach it to your MyGov account, and then if you lose your phone, you forget that. That's all over. Oh, it's just too hard. He decided to come out and actually clarify a few things he did say on today, so he's made an incredibly coherent PSA for us all.
My fellow Queenslanders and other Australians who live outside of Queensland, people in the street always stop me and ask, Clive, I'm trying to get through. Could you please move aside? Also, tell me who to vote for. And I say yes. Don't vote for Liberals. Don't vote for Labor. They think they know everything about government, but they don't know that they don't know anything about governmenting. Vote for me. I know nothing about governmenting. I'm a businessman. Some of the fake news called me a failed businessman. I mean, you know, and then the fake news say that I still owe $7 million to the workering people in one of my failed businesses. Is it true? Yeah, absolutely. But thanks to the fake news media crapping on about it all the days, I'll give them their money after the election. It's perfectly normal. Is that blackmail? Maybe. Will they vote for me and Herbert? That's up to them and how much they want their money. That's called escrow, look it up. The fact is, I'm really good at business. Here's how good I am at business, let me maths at you. My wealth is $4,000 million, right? But if I spend 5,000 million cents to get 300 pairs of legs into Parliament, then I can get $6,000 million back once we approve my giant Waratah mine that sits in the Galilee Basin. But wait, there's a bonus. If anyone who gets elected leaves my party, they'll get hit with $500 million bill. But why would they leave? maybe because they found out that I'm just trying to literally buy way into Parliament to change laws so I can build a mine, big fuck off mine. It's called insurance. If what happened after 2013 and everyone leaves, I'll be even richer. Think about it, $6 billion minus $50 million. That's a $5,950 million profit. If you love Australia as much as I love the part of Australia that has the coal that my Waratah mine lease sits on top of, then vote for the United Australia Party. Send a message to the major parties that your democracy is for sale.
Pretty great stuff there. That was actually Heath Franklin doing an incredible impression of Guy Butler.
I found it very compelling. I thought I'm prepared to vote for the guy. Yeah. I just want to see his candidates.
Well, in the double page spread, there's like 50 candidates on the double page spread, but some of them are just avatars they've stolen off Facebook.
They didn't even just bother getting an egg from Twitter and sticking it in there. Yeah. And they did. They should have made it fun. Like, they've got the silhouettes, but they're not fun silhouettes. It should be like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Or like, you know, a guess who guy.
Candidate for Wills.
Yeah. I actually think that he's just getting a whole bunch of dentists to run.
Irrational fear.
It's because they're communists.
Your fear is rational.
All right, Joe Hildebrand, what is your rational fear for this week?
My rational fear is actually a rational joy, which is this is the week that nominations have closed, the ballots have been printed, the how-to-vote cards are all being handed out, which means that it's time for the dirt units in both parties to dump everything they've got on every dodgy candidate and every unwinnable seat, and I think it is just magnificent. The only exception, of course, is Steve Dixon, who didn't need a dirt file dumped on him because he basically carried the dirt file himself at all times. That's right. And basically single-handedly gave Clive Palmer all his votes, I reckon. I don't think One Nation voters, the really hardcore ones, deserted them over the NRA thing, because we all know that that was a Muslim ABC conspiracy. But the Steve Dixon thing, and this is the rule in politics, that you can be evil, and that's fine. In fact, that's helpful in politics.
Preferable.
But you can't be an idiot. And so the minute you look like an idiot, you pretty much got. Steve, he goes, I know what you're about to think, but I mean, it's so dumb you can't even speak. At least most of the idiots in politics, at least they can talk. But this guy is literally dribbling and it's all on thing. He couldn't even, if you can't pick up in a strip club, like this guy literally couldn't organise a route in a brothel. He's falling all over the place. And the other thing is, okay, remember the Pauline Hanson's maiden speech.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying we're in danger of being swamped by Asians.
Yeah.
She was right. Except it only applied to one man.
Steve Dixon.
And now he's finally come out and told everybody about it, but he's bragging about it. So he's kind of saying it like this is a good thing. So they can't even be racist, right? Like, if you're going to be racist, at least be consistent.
I can't believe that he lost his seat, his position at One Nation, for going to just a strip club and not harnessing the millions of dollars of lobbying power from a foreign agency.
I feel like for me it was the moment he called breasts kahunas.
Yes, yes. I reckon, was confused there.
Yeah, you're like, I think so. You're thinking of cojones and you're thinking of balls. Mm. You've got it all mixed up. Like, if you're going to be a gross old man in a strip club, at least get your terminology.
He was under the influence of drink. I love the people who are comparing him, saying, but how come Kevin Rudd went to a strip club and it helped him? Mm. Well, you know. I don't think it would have been quite as bad.
Because Kevin Rudd didn't get swamped by Asians. Kevin Rudd went over to China. The Asians got swamped by Kevin Rudd.
And he went to a strip club on the Upper West Side of New York, which is very different places. Very high. Having said that, I think we should play a bit of Jeopardy. You guys up for Jeopardy?
Oh, yes.
All right, here it is. This is Disgraced Candidate Jeopardy. We've got a mother of three from Victoria who enjoys hiking in Asia Minor. It's Joe Hildebrand. Joe, what charity are you playing for today?
I'm playing for Christians for Conversion Therapy.
Next, we've got a former astronaut and palliative care Pilates instructor hailing all the way from Middle Earth. It's Janine Perret.
And my charity is the red meat eaters who are being swamped by vegans at the moment.
And our final guest tonight is a sentient nectarine whose hobbies include hanging out on a branch and bracing for the frostbite of a late autumnal change. Despite all this, he's always in season. It's Lewis Hobber.
Thrilled to be here, Dan, and my charity is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
Let's play Disgraced Candidate Jeopardy. All right, this is Disgrace Canada Jeopardy. We have three columns of subjects. The first subject matter is have a go. The next subject matter is dumb, drunk, racist.
That's never going to work.
And the last subject matter is 44, save all. Now, all of these questions have to do with candidates in the last probably year or so who have lost their candidacy.
Oh.
Are you ready?
Okay.
All right, let's kick it off. Lewis, you can pick first.
Can I take dumb, drunk, and racist for 100, please?
Dumb, drunk, and racist for 100. Mm. In a recent public meeting, I said Israel's treatment of Palestinians was worse than the South African system of apartheid, which made some sensitive pro-Israel groups in Australia really pissed off.
Bzz.
Oh. God, it's so hard to keep track of all our racism. It's just impossible. I remember this. Who was it? I'm going to have to toss it over.
Oh,
who knows?
Janine, jump in.
I know, it was the member for Curtin in Western Australia, or the Labor person going for the West Australian seat of Curtin for Julie Bishop and Lisa.
You got to answer like Jeopardy.
Who is the Labor member for Curtin running against Julie Bishop called Lisa?
I'll give it to you. It's Melissa Park.
Well done. You had
everything else right. Well done. I'll take that. Huge. All right, great. You can go next, Janine. You're on. Janine Paradis on 100. Lewis Hobber is on 0 and Joe Hildebrand's on 0.
44 save all for 200.
44 save all for 200. Here we go. I resigned because there was a slight possibility that I may be able to claim Polish citizenship, which is a shame because anywhere would be better than the seat of lay law in Victoria where I was standing as a Liberal candidate.
No, sorry.
You're out.
I just want to say that from now on, if we've learned anything from the past election campaign, the very fact that you stick your hand up to be a candidate for an unwinnable seat should automatically disqualify you from being a candidate for an unwinnable seat. Because
any idea, anyone?
What was the Liberal candidate for lay law? Polish citizenship? No.
Who is Kadorski?
Oh, come on.
Still Janine Parrott on 100, killing it. All right, let's go to Joe.
Oh, I'll take have a go, thank you, Dan, for 100 points.
Have a go for 100, okay. I'm a Liberal kind of guy. Don't mind chinos. Don't mind a chambray shirt. But you know what? I also don't mind my Labour opponent. He's a good bloke. If I wasn't running, well, I'm not anymore, I'd vote for him. In fact, my Labour opponent, Richard Marles, he's a very hard to criticise, which is exactly what I said in the Geelong Advertiser. And when the Liberal Party read it, they pulled me from the race from my seat of Corio.
Corio.
I grew up in Geelong and I cannot have that stand.
See, that's another... No, I don't know. I'm not going to waste your time.
Who is Murray Angus?
Jesus, people, these... Who are all these people? You remember these stories?
We can barely deal with this week's disaster.
Lewis.
There's been 9 this week, Dan.
Why are these nobody candidates who never won so hard to remember?
These have all happened in the last couple of weeks, too.
God damn. All right, I'm going to go for broke, and I'm going to take 44 save all for 400.
Oh, 44 save all.
I'm losing and I need a game-winning victory.
I resigned as the Liberal candidate in the seat of Fowler and I resigned over the fact I have Vietnamese citizenship.
Oh, Jesus. No, I don't know this one either.
Who is Courtney Newman? Janine Parrott.
Have a go for 200.
Have a go for
200. It's not going to make any difference. I like how you're agonizing over the categories. No one's going to.
No, dumb drunk racist is your specialty.
I'm a former Labor committee member running as a Liberal in the seat of Werriwa in New South Wales. I tried to renounce my Lebanese citizenship, but the paperwork's taking a long time. I renounced Lebanon ages ago.
Is it those guys from 60 Minutes?
This one was new, right? This one just happened the other day.
Yeah,
and he was like, and they said, have you done it? And he said, no. But I sent them an email or something, and they were like, that's not how it works.
The Malcolm Roberts defence, yeah.
Don't you just love all the countries that won't let you leave? Why would you want to leave? It's a beautiful place.
Who is Sam Cahill?
Oh, damn.
I know the feeling. I've ordered kebabs that have taken a long time too. It's totally fine. All right. Great. It's your go, Joe.
Oh, my God, it's still going.
I know.
I'll take dumb, drunk, and racist for $400.
Dumb, drunk, and racist for $400. I'm really distrustful of large banking empires and that of the Rothschild family.
Oh,
more
you know,
so.
That's the guy in the. Could just give it to me. Michael Summon, the NT
so
candidate.
Much so, I shared a meme on Facebook about that family from the page of David Icke, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory who believes the world.
Friend of the show.
Is under the control of reptiles. Masking themselves as Jews.
And the Rothschild thing, the global.
I was really looking forward to representing the Northern Territory.
I said that already.
Northern Territory.
Is it Michael Someone? Oh, come on. I said that Labour guy in the Northern Territory.
I'll give it to you. All right, I'll give it to you. 200 points goes to Joe Hildebrand. Who is Wayne Kernoth?
Wayne Kernoth. The same thing. If you turn the W upside down, it's an M.
Dan, I don't know if we can keep going on this. I can't keep losing it to all these terrible candidates.
400 and you gave it to me, so just pretend I won. That's what my mum
used to
do. I'll
give you 200. You can do one more, Lewis. Go dumb drunk races for 50.
All right, I'm loving taking leadership from the host. Thank you, Alex Trebek. Yeah.
I resigned after footage emerged to me at a Washington, D.C. strip club, groping a dancer and making derogatory remarks.
The biggest dick of them all, Dixon, Steve.
Correct! Hey. We've got Lewis on 50, Janine Ferret on 200, and Joe Hildebrand on 400!
Get Winning is also brought to you by
Irrational Fear!
Janine, what is your rational fear for this week?
Oh, debates. Debates. It started off on Monday and then we had one on Thursday with Zali Stegall and Tony Abbott. But I could not believe that Sky looks so good on debates. Well, I can. We do debates excellently. But how bad was Channel 7?
Oh, my
from
God.
From sitting down when they showed them on those bar stools looking like a bad episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire to the stupid split grins. The one advantage Bill Shorten has is Scott Morrison's silly smirk. So instead, Bill Shorten sits there with the grin that made you look like you wanted to put a ping pong ball down his face.
Bill Shorten's smile looks like someone's got it in his ear to say, okay, now it's time to smile. And so you can actually see him remember to smile. He just goes,
whee! Yeah. It's like there's someone out the back sort of actually turning the dial.
I wonder who is. It's like he has a stage mum, like in a Teenage Beauty. He's like, Bill! Lips and teeth.
That's right.
Oh, it was awful.
Do you think Scott Morrison could have held that smirk for the entire debate? Do you think that is why he lost the debate? Because he just couldn't hold that smirk for 60 minutes?
Well, the thing is, he probably, even though he was looking ahead and couldn't see Bill Shorten's weird grin, he must have known subliminally he was being outsmirked.
Maybe the next debate should just be an hour of silence where they just smirk at each other, like a staring contest.
I couldn't agree with you more how terrible that Perth Channel 7 studio looked. I watched the health debate with at the National Press Club, and the angles in the health debate are so much better than the angles in a television
and they
studio
don't have
in
basil.
Perth.
There's only one angle you need to get out of the health debate, and that is that the Labor Party is going to put a tax on Tim Tams.
There was a young reporter there from AAP who I'd never heard of before, and she said a question after Triple J's Shalala Medora. She looked like a young Triple J person, and her name was Marnie Banger, and I thought, oh, that is a great name for a Triple J reporter.
God.
If only she worked at Triple J.
Are you kidding? We'll hire her for sure.
For more on the debates, stick around because right now we're going to play you something from the News Fighters podcast. Dylan Bain, who is the DJ at Irrational Fear, he's got a brand new podcast. It's called News Fighters, where he mashes up the news each week and puts them in a beautiful package. This is his News Fighters podcast.
This is News Fighters,
where we fight the news
so you don't have to.
Hello, fearmongers. Welcome again to this special teaser episode of the podcast News Fighters for Irrational Fear. I'm your host, Dylan Bay. Now, let's get straight into it with the televised head-to-head battle on Monday night that millions of Australians tuned in to watch.
Television's biggest new competition.
Welcome to Lego Masters.
Lego Masters.
No, not that one. I was talking about
Scott Morrison and Bill Shorten go head-to-head in the first election debate.
To be fair, Lego Masters basically summed up what Australian political parties do anyway.
You are building things to destroy them in amazing ways.
To the debate itself, it was produced by Channel 7 in Perth, and from the very beginning, it was obvious that it was trying to brand itself as an epic action movie showdown. Yes, the music was reminiscent of the movie Inception, which was an apt metaphor for the entire election campaign. Because like Inception, it goes for far too long, everyone wishes it was over, and it's left everyone questioning whether or not we're living in a horrible dream. The over-the-top sound design didn't stop there. The entire debate was punctuated by random, out-of-sync sound effects that sounded like a bad noughties TV game show.
As you're watching the Leaders' Debate, every question asked tonight.
Well, thank you, Basil, and thank you to all of those who have joined us tonight.
You know, 12 years ago, that was... Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't heard that many random out-of-place sound effects in an election speech since Bob Hawke in 1987.
By 1990, no Australian child will be living in poverty.
Anyway, straight off the bat, ScoMo started the debate with a white-faced lie.
We all agree that Australia is the best country in the world.
Meanwhile, Mr. Smooth himself, Bill Shorten, kicked things off on a congratulatory note.
I must acknowledge that this is the first time ever there's been a debate in Western Australia, a leaders' debate, so congratulations to the West, you scored the first debate.
Yes, wow, what a momentous and historic occasion for Western Australia hosting this debate. Let's cross to footage of the crowds gathered in the street to celebrate it. In summing up the candidates' economic messages, ScoMo was basically having a Halloween party of scares, while Shorten was having a pity party about fairness and prices going up.
And so there is a clear choice, higher taxes or lower taxes.
Everything's going up in Australia except people's wages.
I think your money is better off in your hands than it is in the government's hands. Bill thinks it's better off in his.
You name it, everything's going up except your wages. Is this a strong economy for who? Who benefits at the moment?
Bill Shorten almost had a decent election campaign soundbite there. Bet we never hear it again. Moving on from that, and it was finally the audience's chance to ask questions.
And thank you to Corey for two very thought-provoking questions from our audience.
Thought-provoking. I wonder what Corey's thought-provoking question was.
Prime Minister, I'd like to ask you a question. What do you think of Clyde Palmer and his questions today? And his comments today. So what does Clyde Palmer got to do with... important is Clyde Palmer to your campaign?
Yes, that question really is thought-provoking. It made me ask some big questions, like where the hell did Channel 7 find these people? Were they paid to be there? And who wrote down the questions for them? Anyways, in the post-debate wash-up, moderator Mark Riley had this to say about Bill Shorten's performance.
Bill Shorten handled it with kind of a deftness.
Yes, a deftness. And here's some of Shorten's trademark deftness with language.
People aren't putting solar rooftop on their on their roofs. So have all the other pensioners. So does everyone else who works tax. For hip surgery and cataracts. He's now spending all that money bombarding you with these crazy posters and the, you know, whatever Australia and, you know, and the digital wallpaper he's sending you.
Yes, Shorten there mentioning digital wallpaper and I guess highlighting the upcoming advancements of Windows 95. Anyways, to the winner.
Bill Shorten has been voted the winner of the first leadership debate. Well, most commentators and the studio audience scored last night's first leaders' debate as a narrow win for Bill Shorten.
25 of them marked it to Bill Shorten. 12 of them marked it to Scott Morrison.
Yes, the studio audience gave the debate to Bill Shorten, and didn't he leave an impression on this particular audience member?
I thought that Bill Shorten was very confident.
Yeah, so good luck to Labor leader John Shorten in the upcoming election. Anyways, at the end of the day, Mark Riley summed up the mood in the audience like this.
I think a lot of them, to be frank, remain disillusioned with politics generally and the leaders themselves.
Yes, and again, the fact that this debate was shown without much promotion on a digital multi-channel and was thrashed in the ratings by grown adults doing Lego proves that the overall mood in the electorate this election is...
You know, whatever Australia...
Thanks for listening, Fearmongers. That's the end of this special teaser episode of Newsfighters. If you like it, why not listen to the full episode and subscribe on your favourite podcasting apps? For more info, check out our website, www.newsfighters.com, or follow us on Twitter at NewsfightersPod. I'll see you at the next Irrational Fear. Keep fighting and bye for now.
This is Newsfighters,
where we fight the news
so you don't have to.
Wasn't that great?
Oh, fantastic.
Love Dylan.
Irrational Fear.
Scientists, technicians and experts are now looking into the cause of the failure.
There's an economist called Steve Keen. I don't know if you follow Steve Keen on Twitter, but he has a theory that progressive voters should be voting
Liberal this time round because there's an economic disaster looming, and it would mean that Liberals would have to deal with the biggest economic disaster ever. That would ruin the brand that Liberals are good economic managers. Is this something you agree with?
Isn't that a plot out of the West Wing?
Yeah.
Look, a mate of mine who works for the Labor Party strategist, he said one of the worst things that ever happened to him was when the New South Wales government the Labor government accidentally won an extra term, and everyone thought they were going to lose. It was when Morris Yemma got up. Everyone thought he was going to go down, and he was going, oh, my God, this is fucked. Like, this is the bit where we're meant to bow out. The whole thing comes tumbling down. We blame the Libs for it, and we need the Libs to come in. They make all the cuts to the public service that we can't make and we don't want to make because, you know, we don't want to upset anyone. We want to look like the good guys. So they come in with their razor gang. They slash it to bits, and then we come back in 4 or 8 years' time and make everything better again, and everyone loves us. And the fact that the campaign team, which I think he was probably working on, was so good that they accidentally won, and the Libs were so useless that they lost when they weren't supposed to, screwed up the whole cosmos. And the exact same thing is happening federally as well. Bill Shorten was put up by the Labor Party basically to fail. He was meant to carry the can as opposition leader as a kind of penance
and
rolling two prime ministers. And then once it looked like the election would be winnable again, they'd put in someone else like an Albo or a Bowen or a Burke or whoever. And no one predicted that the Libs would fuck up quite as much as they had. Like, no, it's unprecedented. Right, who could have seen it coming?
Right.
But just to your theory, or Steve's theory, he has a point, you know, because George W. Bush, the economy basically blew up on the Conservatives' watch. Barack Obama came in and saved it and got blamed for it forever. And we know what happened where that went. Put in a good businessman to run it. Same thing, Kevin Rudd. He copped the GFC. Do they get any credit for it? Absolutely none.
And the recession we had to have off the global 80s crisis as well. I spoke to Steve Keen a little earlier today, and this is our interview with him. Now, you may remember a couple of months ago, we ran a crowdfunding campaign on Irrational Fear to raise money to build the telephone number 1300, who the fuck is PM? And one of the top donors of that was a man who joins us now, and he joins us because he donated enough money to buy a 15-minute slot on Irrational Fear. So this is like paid promotion, really, but it's this is cash for comment. but in many respects, it's a very interesting yarn. He is a rebel economist. He's the author of Debunking Economics. You may know him from Twitter. He is at Professor Steve Keen. It is Professor Steve Keen. G'day, Professor.
I'm at, but it's actually Prof Steve Keen on Twitter. So just
sorry,
people typing too many. Yeah, just Prof. Prof.
It is. Keen. It is fake news. Is what I'm divulging here.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you've just put something on your Patreon last week, which is a pretty interesting idea, and you are basically trying to say to people that we shouldn't vote. Well, progressive voters, like, look, there's no doubt about it. People will definitely know that I'm a progressive voter. That we shouldn't be voting for progressive parties this election, but we should vote the Liberals back in because there is an economic storm brewing, and finally, this will disrupt the narrative that Liberals are good economic managers because they've always passed the buck when economic bad times have come right at the same time as when Labor gets in. Explain to me, how is that true?
Okay, well, if you look at the major political victories Labor's had since we got rid of McMahon, it was the 1972 election, so 73 in comes Whitlam, and like I would never in a million years say I wish that had gone the other way because I wouldn't have been in Vietnam. I would have been in hiding as a Vietnam War resistor.
Right.
I had my bags packed to go to the Draft Resistors Union at Sydney University Union Building that night if Labor actually lost. So, you know, three cheers for Gough in those first, I think it was the first 100 days when he and I think Lance Barnard just got rid of an enormous amount of crap from the Menzies period, as well as getting out of Vietnam. We started Medicare, so that was a brilliant thing. But, of course, they walked straight into what's called the Kemlani affair when they were trying to raise money from foreign borrowings. And they had the massive inflation boost at the time. The economy fell apart in 74, 75. And for ages, you had the don't vote Labor because they can't manage the economy. Then you had Keating and and Hawke coming in, and they actually rode, they're not aware of it, but what sunk Whitlam was the first big private debt bubble burst in post-war history. And you had the level of credit, which is the main thing I focus upon that sets me apart from all other mainstream, well, all mainstream economists and most economists to boot. Credit went from about 17, 20% of GDP down to 5%, and that caused a collapse in demand. Unemployment went from about 1.5% to 5%, as well as inflation going up. That's what screwed Whitlam. And then we got Fraser.
Can you just dumb it down for me, back at that Whitlam moment? Is that because credit was all of a sudden a lot more expensive or a lot less accessible to people?
Well, it went from very accessible, too accessible, to not accessible at all. Right. And then you went from massive demand to a slump in demand. Everybody blamed it on the Labor Party and bad management, but it was actually a credit bubble bursting. It was a global thing. Same thing happened in America. So I regard 73 as a real turning point in the global economy from the sort of tranquil days from the post-war period. That's when it all fell apart, and we've been living in that aftermath ever since.
Then, of course, everybody remembers the Keating moment when we had the recession we had to have, but that was also a global machination as well.
Yeah, but it was turbocharged by Hawke and Keating, because one way they got us out of the 87 stock market slump was to, I think they reintroduced the first home owners grant. I call it the first home vendors grant, because what happens is people get their in those days, I think it was $3,000 off the government, go to the bank, and the bank says, "Oh, that's great. Here's another $30,000, which you can give over to the vendor." And of course, that drove prices up dramatically. We had a huge bubble. I think in 89 to 91, house prices rose by about 30 or 40% in real terms, and then it all slumped when the boost went away and when people started going bankrupt because they'd borrowed too much money. Bang, we had what Keating called the recession we had to have, and that was the first time. In post-war history, the credit went from positive to negative. It went from about 20% of GDP to minus 2.5%. That's what caused that slump.
And then the next big slump was
what?
Back when Labor was in power again, the GFC.
Labor's in power, and that was the classic hospital pass.
When you say hospital pass, you have a beautiful analogy that you've written in your Patreon post about the hospital pass.
Have you played rugby league sometime in your life, I imagine?
You'll need to explain.
I remember playing in my school days, and you're running, you've got a ball, you've got three of you running along to support either side. There's five of them right in front of you. There's no way around it. There's a possibility one or two might make it past, but you've got these two guys you can pass to. One's your best mate, and the other's the class asshole. And you think, oh, Jesus, who do I pass the ball to? Class asshole. Bang. Five of them mug him. That's what I see as the situation for this coming election. Whoever wins it is going to be walking into an economic maelstrom and possibly also a climate maelstrom. They'll stuff it up for sure. They'll be destroyed by it, carried off the field in a stretcher, and they'll be saying, oh, that guy can't play football. You know, don't give the ball to him anymore. It was just the circumstances. So given what I think
are you saying the Liberals have been lucky every election to kind of have good economic headwinds globally to kind of buoy their credentials?
Yeah,
to a large extent. 50 years, really, half a century.
Yeah, I mean, for a start, we had Menzies coming in after the Second World War. At that stage, we had incredibly low levels of private debt, plenty of credit around, lots of investment. And like back in the Menzies days, we actually had plans to build things. Like I think Mark Oliphant was actually working in the UK, and the government wanted to bring him back to boost Australia's role in high technology research. And Mark Oliphant said, I can't come back because you haven't got a cyclotron. They said, we'll build one. And so he came back. I mean, that was a level of dedication to building stuff in the country we've completely lost these days, and it's not all about...
We used to have.
We've lost it.
Your detractors may say that, you have a history of being a bit of an alarmist, a bit of a sky is falling kind of guy. What if you're wrong here? What if the economy kind of plateaus out and or we see enormous growth again and the Liberals are back in again?
Let's go back to that famous bet, okay? Because I that was my first experience of being shafted by the property lobby. Okay. Because I was warning about the financial crisis, and I've got another analogy there, and that is, imagine you've got a road race going on when you've got a driver and a navigator in every car, and there's 99 cars and 100 cars in the race, and they're all going towards a roundabout, and you're the navigator saying to his driver, slow down, slow down, slow down, the road's slippery, you're going to skid. And everybody else doesn't take your advice, and they go through the roundabout really quickly, and they all smash, and you get on the other side, and there's no problem. And your driver turns to you and says, what are you worried about? There was no problem back there.
Are you trying to say you're Australia's Steve Eiseman, standing up in the middle of a Bear Stearns profit and loss statement, reading out text messages for your phone? I'm quoting the Big Short here.
Yeah.
Is that you? Is that you, Steve?
That was me. I mean, I know all the guys in the Big Short. I've met all of them. and we all sort of shared, you know, war stories about the whole bloody thing. But my little situation there was I was interviewed on the 7:30 report by Kerry O'Brien for half the show. You know how rare that is. And he asked me in that what's going to be happen to house prices. And it's pretty much the first time I spoke about it. And what I said was, well, Japanese house prices fell 40% after their bubble economy burst back in 1990. And I see no reason why we'll avoid the same fate. Next day, he interviews Rudd and savages Rudd about my views. And Rudd was really flustered. We all know what a calm and reasonable personality Kevin Rudd was, of course. Very, very flustered. 1 week later after that, out comes the stimulus program. You know, and I agreed with $1,000 for everybody who had a pulse in the country. I agreed with the school building, all sort of stuff to stimulate the economy. What really pissed me off was they doubled and tripled the first homeowner's grant. And I came out saying, well, what's the problem with house prices? Are they too low? They're going to restart the bubble, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a fundamental bit of what happened. And we got out of the crisis by getting back into credit once more. So if you look at what happened to credit data there, predominantly household credit, it was plunging from about 25 or 30% of GDP, much, much higher than America, hit down to about 5% of GDP, but didn't go negative. So we stopped the negative credit experience that America had. So America, when the crisis hit, went from plus 15 to minus 5, 20% turnaround in demand. That's what caused their slump. We avoided it, but by avoiding it, we continued adding to private debt. So what that meant is we're now like a decade later, we're going to face a similar, I don't think as deep as America, I might say, but similar downturn in credit demand. It's going to be from a much higher level of private debt. So when that happened back in 2007, 2008, on Bank of International Settlements, we were roughly at 180% of GDP as the debt level. America was at 170. We're now at 210. So, you know, we're jumping off Mount Everest. And that's why I think the only way to avoid it is to continue borrowing money. And that, I think, we're just at the absolute limit. That's why I think this time around we can't get out of it. I have no doubt the government will try, whatever government it is, and they'll probably bring back the first home vendors boost and all this sort of crap to drag people back into more mortgage debt. But it'll just mean we just delay the time we jump off the cliff and choose a higher cliff.
So the best long-term decision, if you're voting next week, is to vote Liberal out of spite.
Just exactly. Give it over to the bastards. Sit back and watch the Murdoch press try to explain why it wasn't really their fault and it's all the fault of the Labor opposition, that this recession is happening, yada, yada, yada. My dream scenario is that Morrison wins the election. He then walks into a huge economic maelstrom, probably does the right thing and panics and pumps money into the economy, maybe does the wrong thing and tries austerity, total chaos, savaged by the new leader of the Labor Party, Tanya Plibersek, and then two or three by-elections occur, they get wiped out, a year later there's new election, Tanya gets in control, and we have a Labor Party after that. So we put up with one or maybe a year of Morrison before he gets completely shafted, and nobody ever has to ask again the question, where the bloody hell are you? We know he's in retirement working for the coal industry. That's my dream scenario.
Well, Professor Steve Keen, thank you for giving us an enlightening look about mainstream economics. We're all looking at it the wrong way, clearly. If you want to follow Professor Steve Keen, you can on Twitter at Prof Steve Keen, also on Patreon at Prof Steve Keen. And thank you for running a deficit yourself and giving us a surplus so we can get 1300 Who the Fuck is PM off the ground.
Fantastic. I want to hear that one goes, mate. Let me know how many listeners you have, and I want to be there at the moment it changes over.
I know, that's what I'm waiting too. I'm waiting for that too. So I'm currently waiting for my monthly $190 bill to turn up. And as they turn up, I pay it. But the one next month is going to be particularly sweet, so I can hear the Wikipedia tick over and the new voice appear. That'll be great.
On the third stroke, the Prime Minister of Australia will be...
A Rational Fear.
Steve Keen there, pretty interesting guy. If you like that, there's going to be more A Rational Fear on Tuesday on stage at Giant Dwarf. Head to giantdwarf.com.au and please buy a ticket. Podcast gives you $15 tickets. Also, if you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and tell a friend. Are you guys going to tell your friends about this podcast?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Are you going to tell your friends about my podcast? Is this why I'm here? Because I'm cool again?
Oh, yes, sorry. You've got a podcast. You need a plug.
Yes, I'm usually more professional. No, so that's the name of the podcast. But yes, I've got my Sam Dastiari. You can come on it as long as you're disgraced. And AH Kaylee as well. She's hip. She probably works here.
She started out here, AH Kaylee. Yeah. She used to be a broadcaster.
Yeah, I know.
Here.
She's made me cool again. That's how I get to wear a T-shirt.
And then Sam Dastiari has really ruined any coolness you might have had.
Where can people catch you?
At Sky News. 5:30 with David Spears.
So if you want to check out Janine, head off to your local Qantas club and sit down with a bit of Sky News. And Lewis Hover, how can people engage with you on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, I'm on the radio every day, but that's about it. Yeah, you can find me wherever. I'm at Lewis Hover. You know, come to see the show on Tuesday.
Please
come
do.
I'll tell you personally where to find him.
Yeah.
The answer will be right here.
Yeah.
Now, early in the show, we were talking with Professor Steve Keen and about an article he wrote on his Patreon saying why he's voting Liberal, which is basically because there's an economic storm coming and it's about time that they suffered some economic problems themselves rather than blaming it on Labor the entire time. I decided to have a bit of an extended conversation with him and talk to him about if you are thinking about buying a home at this market, should you? So, Professor Steve Keen, with the doom and gloom that you have just kind of laid out for us, with the housing bubble on the horizon about to be popped, what do you say to people like me who don't have much savings, but have decided to give a vocation to comedy and have just kind of thinking about where they should be putting their money in the next little bit and thinking about buying a house maybe the next 5 or 6 years? What do you say to those people?
I'd say wait 3 years. Reason being that what causes house prices to rise is rising levels of new mortgage debt. That's the driver. And this is completely misunderstood by the Reserve Bank and all the mainstream economists in the country. But if you think about it, the demand for housing, you put it to how many physical houses are going to get bought, is new mortgages, which is what you buy a house with, divided by the price level. A bit of mathematics gives you the answer that to have rising house prices, you've got to have rising level of new mortgages. That's been going on in Australia for 40 years. We've now reached the point where it just can't keep on going, and it's now turning negative. So while you've got negative, the rate level of new mortgages is falling, house prices are going to fall too. And in America, that took about 6 years. House prices peaked in 2006. They fell to about 2011, and then they started to rise again because the level of new change in new mortgages became positive once more. So I reckon we've got the government will throw everything they can at to try to get house prices rising. Australia's main government policy is to have affordable, expensive housing. But I think it'll be about 3 years of falling prices before it bottoms out, and I'm sticking with my 40% peak to trough fall, which is what the Americans experienced. In fact, house prices fell 40% from the peak.
Steve, I'm going to get you back on the podcast in 2022 and we're going to talk all about it.
Okay, sounds good.
A Rational Fear.
It also goes to highlight the rights and responsibilities of social media.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.